Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, July 21st, 2021, the 202nd day of the year. And as always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link on the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and turn any negative emotion I experience into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been given. And you can also download the actual worksheet itself. It's a simple PDF file, nothing to sign up for. Click it, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process, or they've given powerful testimonials about how the use of that tool has benefited their lives. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often, and then give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1. Alternately, you can send us an email. You can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org, and you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. And today is the 202nd day of the year, and so today's lesson, as part of a review, is lesson 182. And the reminder to begin each of these review lessons is, I am not a body, I am free, for I am still as the Creator created me. Lesson 182 reads, I will be still for an instant and go home. The commentary reads simply, why would I choose to stay an instant more where I do not belong when the Creator itself has given me its voice to call me home? Reminding us that we are a body, I am not a body, I am free, for I am still as the Creator created me. And Pam Grout's book, The Course in Miracle Experiment, Lesson 202, is titled Note to Body, You Are Not the Boss of Me, Part 2. She quotes James Baldwin as saying, if we understood ourselves better, we would damage ourselves less. Pam reminds us, I am not a body, I am free, for I am still as the dude created me. She continues, in the department of I am not a body, let's take Andy Mackey, a retired horse trainer. Andy's body underwent 9 heart surgeries. Doctors insisted that in order to survive, his body needed 15 different medications. Andy, finally tired of listening to doctors and their limitations, so he took the $600 per month that he normally spent on heart meds and bought 300 harmonicas to give away to school kids. He fully expected this to be his grand final gesture. When he didn't die, he decided to do the same thing again the next month, and the month after that. It wasn't long before he forgot all about his body, the medical reports, and the drugs that he was supposed to take. Rather, he got on with the business of honoring his multitudinous self. In the next 13 years, he gave out 18,000 harmonicas complete with lessons. In 2005, he even set a Guinness Book of World Records when he led 1,706 harmonica players playing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. Andy got on with following the thing that made his heart pitter-pat. He gave up all pointless plans to protect his linear self, that the packaging that, as I said, is only one small piece on the cosmic chessboard. So today, I ask, which piece of your own ginormous chessboard are you going to play? The limited slab of flesh that's prey to guilt and ends in death? Or the wider eternal self that beholds, appreciates, loves, and expands? So that's our workbook lesson for today and the Pam Grout commentary, and we have 50 minutes left to talk about whatever strikes your fancy. Our call in number is 563-999-3581, and if you call that number and press 1, we'll have a conversation. How can we support you today? My eye was drawn today to the book Messages of Life from Death Row, written by Pierre Pratervand in conjunction with This gentleman has spent 20 some years on death row for something he didn't do, and Roger McGowan is his name. And instead of turning to bitterness and rage, he turned his life toward learning about spiritual truths and has become a spiritual teacher to many people, despite being in a situation that most would consider one of the most highly abusive on this continent, certainly in this country. And that's death row in Texas, where they routinely do things that are abusive to the inmates just to make them miserable. Applying the same kinds of observations and capital T truths that we talk about on Mindshifters Radio, Roger McGowan has chosen to study and to observe for himself and to take advantage of the following kinds of truths. In the beginning of the book, he lists 5 things that you'll hear from Roger McGowan, who is stuck in a 6-foot by 6-foot by 10-foot cell, concrete cell, stainless steel toilet, barely any room to move other than to lay on the concrete bed. Only let out for an hour a day kind of thing, often in isolation. And when he does have contact with the guards, they're abusive to him. And that, from that situation, applying the same kinds of tools that we have here in Mind Shifters Radio and Michael Rice's work, Roger McGowan has come to the following conclusions. Love is the fundamental law of the universe, the reply to every situation, our reason for existing, the essence of what we are. Love is easy. Hate is the difficult role to play. Now imagine that coming from a man who's 20-some years on death row for something he didn't do. The second thing is, everything that happens in life is an opportunity to learn. Life is a school of higher learning. Again, consider the context. Imagine how, if Roger McGowan can come to those conclusions on death row, being routinely actively abused, these things might be applicable in my life. They might help me release some of the frustration or upset or depression or anxiety that I generate from some negative interpretations I put on my life events. The third point Roger makes is we can refuse to be victims and we can take total responsibility for our lives. Even happiness is a choice to be made, whatever the circumstances of one's existence. The fourth point, God, infinite love, provides a field of infinite possibilities so each of us can create a life that is perfect for us. And the last point is, everyone creates their own reality, essentially through their way of looking at and interpreting events, people, and situations. The way so many great spiritual traditions observe this and talk about this is we are creating our experience of life. And here's a man on death row, got a hold of enough deep spiritual teachings and applied them in his life in some of the most abusive circumstances in this country to his great benefit and to the benefit of hundreds, if not thousands, of others who have benefited from his letter writing. Pierre Pradervan says in the preface of the book, he says, it might be useful to explain that on a spiritual level, Roger is essentially self-taught. He is a universal spiritual thinker who does not belong to any specific religion or denomination, although he would be the first one to acknowledge the profound influence that the Bible has had and still has on him, thanks to his devout Baptist mother. He's also read broadly and eclectically in the spiritual field. Thinkers that he has read are as varied as Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, Neil Donald Walsh, Conversations with God, Mary Baker Eddy, Science and Health with Keys to the Scriptures. All of these have had a significant impact on his development. He's also been a student of yoga. Some of his correspondents that he's been writing letters back and forth with have unsuccessfully tried to convert him, but he has always remained an independent thinker. So, we're doing this work. We are suggesting that you do this work because it is some of the most practical and powerfully effective work I've ever encountered. Powerful, practical, and effective. if you're at all dissatisfied with any aspect of your life, the consistent and persistent application of these tools can provide you with a change, a fundamental change in the way you view your life. I also had, from yesterday's conversation, I had pulled down the book, The Mirror Theory. And this is one of those books that I wasn't teaching a class, I wasn't leading a book club on it, and it's the first book that I ever used, probably several dozen post-it note flags in this book. And so I thought today, since no one's got a hand up, I would read some of these highlighted points. Again, the premise of the book is that there's a conversation going on between Betsy and this teacher who showed up at her door. And she asks the teacher, "What's the good of going back to my youth as a means of therapy?" And the answer from the teacher is that the good comes from finding all the good reasons for living it. Hasn't living it gotten you to this moment of greater awareness, and isn't that worthy of praise? At one point, she asks, "What am I to do about all my garbage history?" And Charlie says, "The first thing you can do is to give it a name with reverence instead of mockery. Call it the love of God in search of self." That is one that stuck with me. What am I supposed to do with all of my garbage history? The first thing I can do is give it a name with reverence instead of mockery. I can look on myself, I can look on anyone else who's struggling, and choose the filter, here is the love of God in search of self. So, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, you can help shape this call. You can pose a question or suggest a topic. We had a support group last night, and we listened to another Michael Singer talk. Michael Singer now has a podcast, and you can find it if you just search for Michael Singer and podcast. And he has 4 of, I believe it's a planned 6 episodes of podcasts that have already been published. And that stirred conversation. And we didn't have anybody do a worksheet last night, but we did have some talks about what was the actual deeper meaning of what Michael Singer is calling us to. He's calling us to understand that the same core material of Roger McGowan and the Mirror Theory and the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery, which is, it's the thoughts we have about our life that either make it more tolerable or more upsetting. It is the rejection of the flow of life. It is the interpretation we put on it that creates our experience of it, far more than the actual event itself. There's one of the stories in the Mirror Theory about a woman named Mariah who was very good at cooking. And so she would cook, and then more and more people would show up, and eventually she started having all of this resentment for people showing up, eating all her food, and leaving her to do all of the work of the cleanup. And so eventually she had a discussion with Jesus, and Jesus was there to reflect back to her things. And she had to learn that nothing good ever resulted from denying herself the pleasure of a hard-earned reward. She had to respect her own place in the circle of human support. Wholeness isn't found from living in frustrated, angry feelings. Wholeness is found from keeping your emotions full and always appreciative. Happily, once she honored her gifts, others were ready to honor it too. It's in this segment that I came across the statement that no loving gift is ever truly given if the giver isn't honored in the process. Another highlight is that to demonstrate happiness doesn't come from what others give to you or believe about you or say is true. It comes from what you give to yourself, what you believe is true, and what you say is yours. Respect your own emotional barometer. Otherwise, you will forever be adjusting it to suit the whims of others. Happiness wasn't going to come to her by the number of people she could get to be impressed with her gift. Happiness could only come to her from the number of ways she could honor her gift. Another line in that segment says, Jesus couldn't succeed until he understood the nature of success. At first, he thought it was the picture of others behaving as he hoped they would. Eventually, he realized it was the picture of his behaving as he hoped others would. Again, the core of this work is it's all an inside job. How many different ways can we look at our thoughts, our interpretation of events, the experience we're creating through that process, and turn the focus inside and understand what are we doing with our interpretation and the focus of our energy on others that's creating our upset. Right? Love is all there is, and the mind can choose to ignore it. So we have many, many ways to look at and focus on the same thing from slightly different angles and reach the same observations, because what is true is just like everything else that's true. It might be stated in slightly different words. It might be like last night in the Michael Singer talk, he was talking about this analogy / metaphor, whichever you want to call it, of a bird that is lying in water and is completely soaked and submerged and just barely able to keep its beak in the air enough to survive. And it's been there so long, and it's been so subject to every little ripple and every terror that the next ripple might come and might, you know, sink it and drown it, that it's completely focused on what the water is doing. And every time there's any kind of a ripple or a wave or a breeze that disturbs the water, the bird is completely focused on what it's doing to try and calm the water down. So it changes its breathing, it flips its feathers a little bit, it turns its head to one side, and it thinks, well, the last time I turned my head to the side, then the water stayed calm for a while, so I'll turn my head to that side and try and hold it just like this. And so it developed all of these multi-layered, deep superstitions, thinking that if it acted or thought in a certain way, it would calm the water or keep the water from getting too agitated. And yet, every time it did anything, it created more agitation in the water. And its entire focus was on, I just want the water to be calm, I want it to be calm. And every time it wasn't calm, every time there was a wave or a ripple, its thoughts would be, I hate this, I want it to be calm again. What was I doing right before this happened? How can I get this to stop? What was I doing the last time the water was calm? And the bird has been in that water for so long, it's completely forgotten any time that it could fly. It completely has forgotten what it would feel like to have dry wings or to be soaring through the air. And it's completely focused and obsessed on this pattern of observations or this construction of thought process and layer upon layer of superstition trying to control the water. And Michael Singer said, that's us. We are the bird. We are so focused on the people and things outside of us and trying to control them or judge them or and trying to have that calm, peaceful feeling inside of us that the bird would have when the water was calm. But of course, with the bird and the water, that calm, peaceful feeling was also attached to the terror that in the next moment, something was going to disrupt the water. And then there would be no peace. There would be no safety. There would be no joy for the bird. Well, that's what we're like in our lives. We are constantly focused on the things that we want to have happen or the behaviors that we want others to exhibit or the behaviors that we want others to stop exhibiting. And we're absolutely convinced that that's the only way we're going to get safety, that we're going to get the happy feeling, that we're going to get the calm. And the bottom line is, that's exactly the teaching of Mind Shifters. That's exactly the teaching of Way of Mastery and Course in Miracles. It's all an inside job. We are busy creating our negative emotional states. Nothing outside of us has ever created an emotional state, positive or negative. And it's the absence of that active observation moment to moment that leads us to continually focus on external objects and people and events, continually focus on what we want to have happen in the future and what we're resentful of or angry about from the past. It's the same message in a slightly different format. Again, it's available free. It's a Michael Singer podcast. It's the first of his planned 6 podcasts. And it's a little over an hour long. But it's the same message. The deep, true messages are the same wherever you find them. They're going to be in slightly different form. One may well resonate with you better than another. We had somebody in the group last night that said, you know, this just isn't working for me. This isn't going to be the teaching I come back to. I can just tell them, which is fine. There are many, many other ways to talk about the same dynamic. If the truth is there, it's accessible. For those who will question, for those who will give up what they want to have the truth be, for those who will give up the need to be right, the truth of how life is and how it works is there to be seen. and you can have Michael Rice's formulation of it and his words for talking about it, or Guy Finley's, or Michael Singer's, or Joseph S. Benner. That was another topic that came up last night. His book, The Impersonal Life, written in the early 1900s. It's all the same stuff. It's talking about how there is a divine, there's a higher order of intelligence and integration than our conscious logical mind. And it's not being done, you know, the world itself is not being created by our logic, by our thoughts. This is one of the big points from Michael Singer last night, is we spend a lot of our mind energy trying to figure out how to make the world look, feel, and sound like what we want it to be. And the fact of the matter is, our mind energy isn't what creates the world to be what it is. There are, you know, trillions of other factors that are unfolding, that have been unfolding since the beginning of time, the Big Bang, that are allowing life to unfold in, through, as, and around us moment to moment. And that is not at the whim of our thoughts, that, boy, I wish it was sunny today, and I wish it was warm, and I wish the days were longer, and I wish this person would, you know, date me, and I wish I had a different job. And that's not the driving force for the flow of life that we call creation, this life energy. It is, however, the driving force for how we experience our interactions with that flow of energy. And all these, you know, great spiritual teachings boil down to the same thing, slightly different terminology, slightly different formulations, and all telling us, look, it's an inside job. You're creating your experience of life in each new present moment. And you're creating it by how you're choosing to focus your conscious awareness in each moment. So if you don't like what your experience of life is, change the focus of your conscious awareness. Change the thing that's looking rather than trying to change what you're looking at. So 563-999-3581. Nobody in the chat room. We have five callers, and we have time for conversation or a suggested topic for conversation or a question or an answer. I am delighted to report that both Robert Whitaker and Jim Gottstein have agreed to be interviewed for the Journey's Dream podcast, so those will be coming up in the not-too-distant future. Jim Gottstein is author of the Zyprexa Papers, and Robert Whitaker is author of Anatomy of an Epidemic, The Surprising Rise of Mental Health Disability in Our Culture, despite the fact that we tout so many powerful, wonderful medications for healing, in quotes, for treating, no quotes needed, mental, emotional problems. So, what's on your mind? How can we direct the flow of conversation or even the monologue today, if you just want to raise a hand and or send me a text and suggest a topic if you're not interested in being on air? 563-999-3581 and press 1. I suppose there are, as I mentioned, there are dozens of these quotes from the mirror theory. So I could go back to some of those. And sometimes it's a little awkward because there's you need the context, and I don't want to tell a long story, but one of my favorite quotes from the book says, nothing valuable goes from one person to another unless that transfer carries love. Nothing valuable goes from one person to another unless that transfer carries love. Might seem rather pie in the sky or idealistic, but I keep coming back to how these teachings are the most practical because they're true spiritual teachings. Guy Finley's, one of my favorite quotes from Guy Finley is, there is nothing more practical than true spirituality. There's a quote here asking, I'm wondering what life is all about. And the response from the teacher is, as soon as life is appreciated, the wonder is understood. Philosophical questions are helpful or not, depending upon how you feel while pondering them. The soul, in appreciation, looks for all the good reasons it exists. The soul, in doubt, looks for the opposite. And if that isn't masochistic, I don't know what is. So the soul, in appreciation, looks for all the wonderful reasons it exists. Nothing gets you into more of a quandary than pretending you have what you don't have. Not only does it thwart your needs in the moment, but it puts you into a future where needs are never met. And this reminds me of the line that from so many different places that says, the vast majority of your pain and suffering is derived from the process of trying to pretend that what's true is not true and what's false might one day be true. There's a question in the book that asks, well, is it mandatory that all of your mirrors get diagnosed? And the answer from the teacher is, no. Mirrors are simply tools to assist you in your search for oneness. If you stay aware of them, they teach you about your feelings. If you don't stay aware of them, they come back anyway. You'll get the lesson eventually. We all get the lesson eventually, is the message. Guy Finley has a quote that says, there is an unseen cosmic curriculum, the purpose of which is to educate the soul to the existence of the wisdom of the soul, of the spirit, of the power that gave rise to the curriculum. There is an unseen cosmic curriculum that has only one purpose, and that is to educate the soul to the existence of the wisdom that created the curriculum. So this is life trying to help us become aware of life. And that feeds into one of Guy Finley's other quotes that I'm so fond of. It says, every time I encounter an event that I don't want, I could choose the filter that says, this is life asking me, hey, Tim, would you like to know what's keeping you from loving me and knowing me more deeply? So everything that happens, in other words, Guy Finley says, the lessons I need to learn in life ride into my life on the back of events that I don't want. And the importance of a lesson for me is directly proportional to how much I don't want the event. And some would say, well, that really makes life hard. And Guy Finley would offer that the only thing that makes it hard is trying to reject the lesson, which means it's got to keep coming back. The fact that events occur that I don't want and that there's a lesson for me in that event isn't easy or hard. It's just the way it is. I make it much, much more difficult for me when I try to push away or deny the truth of what is. There was a story in the book about Abraham and how he was not the ancient Abraham, but Abraham who was alive during the time of Jesus. And Betsy asks, so what does it mean that the wisdom in reality eluded Abraham? And the teacher said, it means that the wisdom of these events and what they meant to Abraham was missed. Abraham's ego said, look at how foolishly Jesus is behaving. Love in that very same moment was telling Abraham, forget about Jesus' behavior and look at your own. Ego only cares about what others are doing. Love only cares about what you are doing. And one of my favorite quotes from the book, as soon as you think that someone else has to change to make you happier, the answer to happiness is lost. As soon as you think anyone or anything outside of you is creating your emotions, you've created a codependent relationship, Dr. Michael Rice would say. The very same message from the mirror theory. As soon as you think that someone else has to change to make you happier, the answer to happiness is lost. So, we have somebody raise a hand. I believe it's Susan Bingham.
Hey, Dr. Well, Tim.
Susan?
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
I got you.
Good. Well, it always comes back to that very thing that you just quoted. The truth of the fact that anything that my upset is caused only by my own interpretation of events, whatever is happening. And the other side of that is that we have the capability and the permission to be totally at peace and joyful, no matter what is happening. And we have had this crisis with my son, and it's really been exhausting. There are things moving along, but it has been so exhausting, and yet I keep coming back to the same.
So you mean to say you've really exhausted yourself over this?
Yes, I have exhausted myself. Absolutely. I take responsibility for that, and I can put it that way. I have become just exhausted to the point where I don't know what to say or what to think. I feel as if I am in a waiting. I'm keeping vigil. I'm just watching, functioning well, but getting tired faster than usual. I think because there's still a tremendous amount of resistance to accepting things as they are.
In you or someone else?
In what's happening with my son. To accept things as they are happening with him as far as I perceive them. It seems like an actuality that he is still struggling. Now I'm observing, struggling. I'm hearing him tell me that it's hard for him to want to stay alive. I'm listening to that. Oh, we might go for a walk, and he'll say that. He'll follow it with a promise not to do anything drastic to hurt himself, but that if it weren't for his kids and his wife and his sense of responsibility, he would have long since chosen not to be around. This, to me, feels like, you know, a dire situation, and I'm staying as even and allowing and interested and neutral as I can be. But the result is an emotional numbness, just a period of waiting. I've been doing worksheets, but it ends up with the same thing of allow my son his journey, be curious, watch, love, see him as well, healed, trust, no matter what happens, even death, it's all okay. But this is just the hardest assignment. And when I'm listening to the radio show and hearing you talk, I don't even know how. I mean, the fact that I press one seems miraculous. I haven't had enough organized brain to say anything on here. So I'm just sort of coming to you with the complete mess of who I am right now. And also the curiosity I feel because my son has given himself a week and a half, and then he's going back to practicing medicine. He has said if he knew he was covered financially for the rest of his life, he would have left medicine long since. But he feels responsible for paying the bills, and being responsible to his talent as a doctor and responsible to his clients and responsible to his fellow doctors who, upon whom he feels he has loaded all of his work for 3 or 4 weeks now when he's been out of work. He feels guilty, responsible, angry at himself. You know, all of this is going on, and I am hearing these things and basically doing nothing. It's really hard to do nothing, but my something doesn't amount to much. So I guess what I'm doing is giving you a report. I don't even think there's a question here.
Well, so several things come to me to say. One of them is that if I have somebody who tells me that they're suffering so much that they're thinking they don't want to live, and if they didn't have this or that obligation, they would have ended their life already, I want to make sure I at least make the offer of professional help. Now, of course, that's a sticky wicket these days, as we're talking about with the different, you know, the mental health treatment from the allopathic position, which is, you know, forced medications and forced hospital stays, et cetera. And I'm not necessarily recommending that, but that's one thing that I say, you know, is I want to make sure that I have at least offered to support a person in finding the best possible highly trained resources for reaching some kind of resolution.
Well,
the next thing is when you say I'm not doing anything, I think, well, you're doing a lot. You're there, you're listening, you're, you know, you're using your own tools, you're doing the gentle art of blessing, you're trying to reaffirm and reassure his value as someone who knows him and someone who loves him deeply, and so that is a lot. However, it isn't what my ego tells me I should be doing. It isn't what my ego wants to be able to do.
Right. Right. True. But in all of this, to be able to say, I am leading a joyful life, a peaceful life, seems absolutely, totally impossible.
Right, because when you're focused on that, you're not joyful. You're not feeling peaceful. And things like that are going on the planet all the time. They aren't always
right.
going on with your son, but they're always going on with somebody. And sometimes
yes.
many, 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 many thousands of somebodies. And the truth of our lives is that while there's always a lot of that negative going on, there is also always a lot more positive. And that's the message in this work, is that I'm going to create my experience of life by what I choose to focus on. So you choose to focus on how tortured my son says he is right now, or do I choose to focus on the blessing of my son as a person and all he's meant to me in my life and all the wonderful impact he's had on his patients and coworkers? If I focus on one, I get depressed. If I focus on the other, I feel joyful and
mm-hmm.
grateful. That's the only point we're making. There's nothing Pollyannish about this, saying, oh, there's nothing wrong, oh, everything's fine and all's right with the world. That's not the point of this teaching. The point of this teaching is what I focus on is what I end up creating my experience of life from. And, you know, it's like many, many different ways to say it. Mr. Rogers' mother used to say, whenever there's a problem, whenever there's a crisis or a catastrophe, look for the helpers.
Mm.
So here, all right, this is your son's having a very rough time in his life. Okay, what are you going to focus on? Are you going to focus on this particular time in his life? You could. You have been, and you see the results that gets you. You could also focus on the joy of having him as an offspring and the interactions you've had through your life and the joy of watching him be so successful and effective as a doctor. And that's what we're called to in this work and in many other deep spiritual traditions, is just the recognition that there's always a lot more going on here than we know about. And when we choose to focus on the stuff that we see that we don't like, that's what we create our experience of life from. And it's okay, because that's our life. Just like it's okay that your son is focusing on what he's focusing on and creating that life for himself. It's not what you would want him to focus on. It's not what you might choose. But it's his life to live. So I'm not here to tell you, change the focus of your thoughts and do it differently. And I'm not, if you want to stay in this pattern and exhaust yourself focusing on what's going on with your son from the negative perspective, that's your life. That's okay. And it's okay that he's doing that. I don't know how that's all going to turn out. I don't know that I might not wake up a month or two from now and be so depressed that I can't function, that something gets out of whack in my energy system or my hormones, and I don't know. So I'm not preaching to people about what they should be doing. I'm talking to people about what we can observe about how the process works and encouraging people to look at, when they understand how the process works, evaluating for themselves, do they like the results they're getting? And if so, good, keep doing more of it. And if not, feel free to try something else. I have somebody that I know I'm working with right now. He's got a 15-year-old who's one of the more dramatically upsetting people. He's very bright, but he has these violent outbursts and mood swings, and they're pretty sure it's coming from an autoimmune encephalopathy, meaning there's any kind of little trigger in his system and creates inflammation in his brain. And these are people with lots of money, And these are people that love their son, and they've been taking him to all kinds of different treatments, and nothing's worked. He's 15 years old. It's been since he was an infant that they've had this problem. And yet he's still willing to try new things. But every time he goes to try something new, there's another set of complicating factors that get in the way. And so, you know, I recommend a functional medicine psychiatrist that he hadn't heard of before. So they go over there and they try and get started, but they need some enormous number of vials of blood for blood tests because they do an exhaustive mapping. And they got maybe 10 or 12 vials of blood from him the first time, but the young man passed out, and then now he's freaked out and he won't go back for the second series of blood draws, so they can't get the analysis. Well, so, you know, I could sit here and say, well, you're not trying hard enough, or, you know, try this or do that, but I have no idea that any of that would work.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, I can sit here and just focus on, wow, how wonderful it is for this 15-year-old to have parents who have the financial resources to pursue these things that the insurance company won't pay for, and how wonderful it is that after 15 years of this, they still haven't given up on him. Because this is the kind of situation that when these parents give up on him, if he doesn't get his act together, he's going to be in an institution the rest of his life, no matter how smart he is.
Mm.
So what am I going to focus on? Well, what I choose to focus on is going to end up creating my experience. I could get depressed. I could feel frustrated. I could be angry at the medical doctors that just want to throw meds at him. I can choose to focus on how wonderful it is that these parents keep trying and that they have the financial resources to pay for things that insurance won't pay for. And whatever I choose to focus on is going to create my experience. That's our message. Not what you should do, but how you can understand what you're doing is contributing to your experience of life. And then you make your own choices, just like your son's making his.
Well,
and
I must say
go ahead.
I must say that the tools have helped. Tim Bingham and I have been watching our son have anxiety since he was about 6 years old. And it got really, really much worse when he was an adolescent. Hang on, it happens that he's calling right now, so I'm just saying in a meeting. Okay. I was thinking about how long we have dealt with this and what a mess I've been and how much less of a mess, but I still feel like a beginner. I'm doing the work, Tim. I really am, and I'm much more productive and healthy and centered and functional than I ever would have been before, but I still feel like a beginner.
Yeah, well, welcome to the crowd. Welcome to the crowd. And it shows that you're doing the work, even the way you're talking about it. And I would just highlight, you know, one of the next potential levels for you to really glean for the next level is for you to tap into changing, talking about how exhausting it is, and start thinking and talking about how I am exhausting myself in this process.
Yes, that's good. That's good.
Because then it opens me up to being able to observing, okay, so how is it that I'm spending my mind energy and how could I spend it differently?
Mm-hmm. That's good.
All right. Well, I thank you again for the call. We've reached the end of our time. I will continue to send loving thoughts and blessings, and I'll mute you so we can do our transition. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice. I'll take the liberty of turning your microphone on.
Yeah, I just said a whole bunch of stuff and nobody heard it but me, so I must have been the one that needed to hear it.
All right.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. Bye-bye. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, July the 21st, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. I'll check and see if Michael's having problems technically getting in. I'll just say thank you, everybody, for holding the space for us. We did a very fast but fun 10-day journey. We drove from Bristol to Knoxville and dropped my dad off on Sunday, and then we drove on up to St. Louis, Missouri, and got there in time to have dinner with Krista. That's Michael's daughter. Had dinner with her and her family on Sunday night, and then we had the baby on Monday and Tuesday all day, and Wednesday had another meal with our whole family, and then we took off and drove to Kansas City and spent 3 days with Michael J. That's Michael's son, and his girlfriend and mother, and after 3.5 days with them, then we drove over to Heartland, and we spent all day Sunday packing and loading a U-Haul truck, and then Monday took off, started to take off early, but then we thought of something
hour
else
day.
That we, yeah, and so we picked up some other things at Heartland, and we were going to go to Memphis and have lunch with a very dear friend of ours, and then we got within 16 miles of Heartland. We had a flat on the U-Haul truck. We had to get that fixed. But, you know, God took care of everything because we were being delayed for a reason. And when the tire blew, there was nowhere to pull off. And when we finally found somewhere to pull off, we were within a half of a mile of a U-Haul dealership. And they got us all fixed up and back on the road. And we had called our friend in Memphis and told her our situation, and she told us about one of the Memphis bridges being out and that everybody then was using the other bridge and traffic was backed up for a couple miles or a couple hours. So we decided not to go through Memphis, to go through Nashville. So it's like all of our plans changed on Monday, and we drove for 15 hours and finally fell into bed and went to sleep at 4 o'clock in the morning and then got back up and unloaded the truck, and we're going to take it back this afternoon. So we've got part of the stuff in different places all throughout Dad's house, and he comes back this afternoon. We got Aria this morning, so life is sort of back to a new normal. Welcome, Michael.
It was all worth coming back to hear this little voice when she came in the house say, although we're teaching her a little differently than the idea of missing, but she said, I missed
back
you.
Off your,
came over and
back
gave
off
me
your
kiss.
Microphone, Michael.
Okay.
Back off your microphone a little bit.
Okay, is that better?
Yes.
Okay. So anyway, I was saying it was all worthwhile to get that little look and that hug and that kiss from Aria. And then when we got here, of course, we had a trailer to unload. After that 22-hour day, we got in about 3:45, but it was all safe and sound, and our quote-unquote breakdown was just perfect because literally, rather than sitting out, we could have been stranded on the interstate, and who knows how long it would have taken to get U-Haul up there and get it handled. They just said, go ahead and drag it on down the road and pull in, and 10 minutes later, we were pulling back out and on the road with a new tire, so we were definitely taken care of. And then yesterday, early morning, started unloading, took a nap, finished unloading by, I don't know what time we were at it, still last night at 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I mean, here with my hand in the Avacyn, kind of in a cocoon, just getting caught up and breathing, and delighted to be back home. So I watered the garden this morning. Had a young man next door who took care of our gardens, and we had our first ripe red tomato. Before we left, we harvested about 20 small to medium-sized tomatoes that we weren't ripe, so we did fried green tomatoes before we left. Had a, as they say in the South, a whole mess of fried green tomatoes. And Aria shared the one beautiful ripe red heirloom tomato that was so delicious with both. It was her tomato, but she and I each got a bite. So anyway, delighted to be here and delighted to have the opportunity to once again to move these tools in the direction of being available to every mind, heart, and being on the earth. It's what we're here to do. And, of course, forgiveness being the opposite of what the culture teaches. You know, we've been conned by a lie about forgiveness. We've been told that, you know, if you're in pain, it's somebody else's fault, and all you have to do is let them off the hook, and then everything will be okay. And, of course, I could literally meet and stand in front of 6.5, 7.5 billion people on the planet and say the words, I forgive you, 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 and I will have done no forgiveness work. Because in the Aramaic language, the word forgive represents a tool with which you go inside yourself and remove the root of your hostility, your fear, your rage, your grief, your pain, your drama, and your trauma. And as you do that, you get to live life without those things, even when seemingly traumatic things happen out there in the world. People go into, oh, this happened, we could be an upset. And when I'm an upset, I get to miss the cues that would take me into, you know, what would easily handle the situation. So we're here to create a change of mind for, or at least make the potential of that change of mind being available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. So we're delighted that you're part of the conversation. If you are not using the tools yet, you're welcome to go to our website, whyagain.org. It's the word why, W-H-Y, again, A-G-A-I-N, .org is our website. And if you go to the upper left-hand corner of the page, click Start Here, you'll be walking through literally decades of research on how and why forgiveness works and how to do it. We have a worksheet process. You can actually take that worksheet process. You can print it off on your computer and do it at home. Or you can do it right there on the website. Jeannie's got it set up with an app on the computer, on the homepage. And you can click it and actually do the worksheet right there, print it when you're finished. And or you can go to your app store on your phone. There is only one forgiveness app in the world, and Miss Jeannie created it. Accolades, Jeannie, the job you did with that is awesome, and the new upgrade just takes it all to another level. So if you go to your app store and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, all one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness, you'll be looking at and able to download for free the world's only forgiveness app. It requires only one permission. We purposely designed it so that you would feel comfortable and know that the app is totally and completely private. You know, people put some pretty heavy-duty private things into their worksheets. So you can feel confident in doing that, because the only thing that your phone or the app can do is, if you give it permission to use the Internet, so it actually works, so you can download it and use it. If at the end of your worksheet you decide you want to keep a record of it, then you can hit the print button, save it as a PDF, and it will need permission to write it to your drive so it can save it as a place to save it. But other than that, we have no interest in dialing your phone or changing, sending settings or making phone calls or sending texts or having access to your data. it seems like just about every app out there wants all of that, and it has absolutely no use or reason for it except that it's going to turn it into a way to make money. And what we're interested in is a way to make this tool available so people can comfortably use it. So download the app, and you'll be doing forgiveness right there on your phone. You'll have access to the Dragon Klingon game for kids. You will also be able to access the commitment in many of its forms, new feature that you need built into it with this last update. So we're honored and delighted that you're here to be part of this conversation. And Ms. Jeannie, I think it was really a stroke of genius for you to last week have said, well, we're going to be on the road Monday and Tuesday. How about if we take one of the workshops and we give it away? So the workshop, Getting the Stress You Need, Jeannie took the audio track off of that workshop, and it's a two-hour video that we normally have on our website for sale. So you've got access to that. All you have to do is download those two shows, and you've got the whole Getting the Stress You Need video. And, you know, it is unique information on the planet. You won't find the information in that workshop anywhere else that I know of. And it tells and shows exactly how stress is created, exactly how stress is resolved. You know, the world speaks about, well, that was a stressful situation. That's a lie. There are no stressful situations. There are only situations. If you're not aware of how stress is created, then you think, well, the situation is running the show. Situations can't run the show. But situations can trigger in your mind that in you which creates stress. And so Monday show, Tuesday show from 1 till 2 o'clock, you have access to that whole workshop. Beyond that, Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
It is all quiet, so I guess we catch up from 3 days of not reading, huh?
Uh-huh. Well, let's go for it. We'll dig the book out and we'll read from Why Is This Happening to Me Again? I just got a phone call from a woman a few minutes ago out in Arizona, and she said, well, I'm an old timer. She says, I'm 71, and I have a track phone, you know, an old flip phone, trap phone. She said, I don't have a computer. I don't have computer access. I can't get text. I don't use email. So couldn't send her any support or any information, unfortunately. But she had actually, someone had given her a copy of the book Radical Forgiveness. And then the bookstore owner who pointed that out to her said, oh, yeah, but if you want the real thing, here's the book you need, and that's Why Is This Happening to Me Again? She said that's where the fellow who wrote Radical Forgiveness got his work. And if you're into that book, Radical Forgiveness, he did some good work. It's important to know that his actual worksheet, which comes right out of my Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, He didn't stick around long enough to really get what forgiveness meant. And he's still talking about pardoning in place of forgiveness. So the key step, and I've seen this happen so often, I've had many people say, well, you know, there was something about that worksheet I didn't like, so I created my own. So that's great. Maybe I can learn something from you with what you've done with it. Please send me a copy. And most people, as with Colin Tipping, leave the forgiveness piece out, and they default to the old brainwash of pardoning. So we're here to support understanding what forgiveness really means and how to really truly engage in the process of accessing dissociated parts of your mind and removing them, which is what the word forgiveness actually means. How do you address? How do you remove what never belonged within your mind? And that's what we're here to do. So we're talking about with the character Richard. We're chapter 15, 89 of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? If you don't have a copy, unfortunately, I can't sell you one because it's out of print. And we've just had more on our plate than we could do to start getting back to printing again. However, you can go to Amazon or you can go to eBay, and they always have dozens of copies available, used fairly inexpensively. And or you can also go to our website, whyagain.org, and you can download the book free in English or Spanish or German or Farsi or Dutch, or part of it's in Thai. What other languages do we have, Jean? It has been translated into Swedish, but the Swedish publisher would not allow us to put it on the website free. And I've actually been pursuing them. The company who originally published the book is no longer in business, and they sold it to someone else, and the information I got, it was not the right company, and we're still trying to find out where they went so that we can get our copyright back and make the book available. So chapter 15, transitions. So talking with Richard about this idea of how you have to let go of a part of yourself that perhaps seemed very dear, but was actually a false part of yourself. And so Richard has lamented about how, well, who am I going to be if I'm not doing this hostility and fear stuff? And so this chapter on transitions is to let people know there's a point where it can become quite a challenge to not function out of what used to be you, and to truly discover who you are and function out of that self. So as Richard expresses this concern about who will I be, for him, sounds like a part of you is already feeling sadness about the loss of the old personality roles you love to play. Giving up old identities and roles is important in this work. Sometimes those old selves don't go without a fight and a struggle. The feelings of loss can be so strong it might taste like a death. And if you think back, you remember this man Yeshua 2,000 years ago says words to the effect of, in order for you to live, you've got to die. And what he's saying is nothing about killing yourself. He's saying that the old self that isn't who you are has to be literally deleted from this multi-generational database called the body-mind unit. So this, you know, you must, in order to live, you have to die, may sound like a ridiculous statement, but when you see that the old self, the false, disempowering self has to go or die for the true self to live, it makes perfect sense because it is a death of sorts. If you'd asked me when we first started, if I wanted to give up my feelings of guilt, anger, and sadness, I would have said no. They're normal feelings. Part of what makes me human. Everyone has these feelings, and they give us depth and character. Living without them would be hollow and a boring way to live. Well, Richard, it might help to note that guilt, anger, sadness, blame, and victimhood deliver no benefits. That we've been convinced they're normal, they are not natural, nor a useful part of life, except as feedback. Aside from a perverse sense of righteousness, martyrdom, or negative attention, did they ever bring actual love, benefit, or reward? When those feelings are operational, are you a choice in your life? Who's running your mind at those moments? Those are interesting questions, Richard replied pensively. I didn't realize how I distorted myself or how twisted it is to take pleasure in being a victim. I had not considered the fact that I gave up my power of choice to those feelings. seemed like a good way to get attention and not have to accept blame for anything. No matter what went wrong, I convinced myself, it was always somebody else's fault. As he continued, I was aware of his efforts to keep breathing and sent a silent acknowledgement. Another thing that seemed like a benefit at the time that I pulled in sympathizers to listen to my stories and agree with me. It was a way to feel powerful. By manipulating others into being on my side, I rallied support against a common enemy, convincing myself and almost everyone else that I was right. I had all those people in the palm of my hand agreeing with me as I attacked someone who was innocent. I was somebody. And so Richard's starting to question and develop the ability, the brain cells, to see that in order to play this game of feeling like I am somebody, he has to give up the truth of who he is. And that's a costly battle when you realize that who you are is conscious, active, present love. And in order to feel the kind of false power that he was talking about, false control over others, he literally had to give up his human life. Now, if you're living in that world where hostility and fear seem like the only options, it's going to take some time to build the brain cells for living out of something different. Now, fortunately, you're not going to have to spend decades finding the tools to do that piece of work. We've done that part for you. I mean, it took me 30 plus years to really understand what forgiveness was, how it worked, and how to do it, to really, truly put it into practice. Well, you can short circuit all of that. Go to the website. All of it's there. Everything is offered. Everything is freely given. There's nothing that's withheld. I can remember early in my teaching career, it was a different teaching that I taught, and the fellow who was my supervisor there said, "Well, Michael, you can't give people all of that, in, you know, just because they ask. Otherwise, in the future, you won't have anything to sell them." It's like, well, you know, I've found that I haven't been able to out-create her, and everything we've got, we make available. And what seems to happen as a result of that is we keep having a greater, greater, and greater expansion of the functionality of the tools. And so we're here to share them with you, and as you use them, support you in your process. And we're delighted that you're here to lend a listening ear. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you're listening through one of those stations that we can't see in our control panel, our call-in number, most people listen to the show by just calling in and listening directly. But if you're in one of those syndicated stations where we can't see you on our control panel, if you have a question, call into the show at 563-999-3581, 563-999-3581. And as you're listening, if you have a question or a comment, if you push one, we'll be having a conversation. And so if you're out there in listener land and you have a question for us, we'd love to hear from you. What's on your mind? How can we support you? Are these principles making sense for you? 563-999-3581. How can we support you? Miss Jeannie, what's happening?
Well, it is all quiet. No hands up in the switchboard or in the chat room. I'd like to put a thank you out once again. Magda's on the switchboard, and we could not have done this without Chuck and Magda and Julie.
Oh,
so thank you so much. We are totally, the U-Haul is empty and ready to go back. It has to be back by 4 today. And we've got the majority of it at least in a corner so we can still walk through the house. So thank you again so much for all of your support. So if somebody has a question or comment, press 1.
And absolutely, Magda, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. We have enjoyed the food that you sent. And Chuck, thank you for growing that garden, you guys, so that we can share in the abundance of it. Chuck and Magda gave us, oh my goodness, all kinds of stuff, kale and tomatoes and tomato sandwiches when we got home were awesome. So thank you for that. And your support, your physical support, just all the stuff that you packed up for us before we got there and the help, Chuck. Thank you for the physical help of getting it all in the trailer. And wish we could have carried you in our back pockets when we got here. You could have helped unload, too. That was interesting. We got in about 3:45 in the morning and then slept for a few hours. We're back up at 8 and got started on it. And someone was going to be here to help us, and that didn't quite work out, so we just stopped and went back to bed and caught up on our sleep a little bit. But it is, as Jeannie says, all unpacked and we're filtering into the house. And so much, much, much appreciation for all three of you. So Miss Jeannie, do we have a conversation happening out there?
No, we don't. It is all quiet.
Well, we've got 35 minutes left. It would be a shame to close the show down at this point. But we've got so much on our plate, and we still haven't really caught up with ourselves. And so if you're out there with a question or a comment for us, how about pushing 1? You know, sometimes people feel like, oh, I don't know if my question's important enough. Sometimes the most basic questions take us back to some of the roots of the work that helped to renew understanding, bring understanding on a whole new level for everybody involved, even people who've been doing the work for many years. And so, and sometimes people say, well, you know, my voice might be a little shaky. I don't know about being on the radio. It's like, can you make it okay if your voice is shaky? And call, ask your question. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Or what's your experience been in the work? It was kind of fun talking with this woman. Just half an hour or so before the show, just called out of the blue, and you know, this bookstore that had told her if they wanted the root work of Radical Forgiveness to get my book, and she said it took several weeks to get it. They had to find a used copy of it, and but she was just so excited and delighted to be reading it. It's like, oh, where has this been all my life? And I'm in agreement. You know, this information has been around for 2,000 years. And it's just been diluted and bastardized to the point where the original work of Yeshua is almost unrecognizable. And so we're here to make it recognizable. We're here to make it sensible. We're here to make it work for you, to support you in actually taking the tools. You know, this whole teaching of Yeshua isn't about some kind of big belief system that you're supposed to believe and then you're saved. It's about a body of work that each individual has to be done. And it's interesting at a point where several disciples are there and they say to Yeshua, you know, well, how do we make the Creator happy? What does that take? And he gives them an answer. And in essence, what he says to them is, you have to go inside yourself. You have to face everything based on hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, drama, and trauma. You need to remove those energetic patterns, and you need to recognize that you are love and function out of love. If you read that passage, what you'll hear happens is half of the disciples get up and say, too hard a saying, and they leave. Those people are still going, too hard a saying. We don't want to do the work of this man. We just want to believe in it and hope it'll work for us. But if you listen to the man himself, he said, there is work to be done. too hard a saying. And now we have a whole theology here on planet Earth. Thousands, millions of people believe the sophistry, well, there's nothing you can do about it. You're such a weak and helpless sinner, there's nothing you can do. And that, friends, is a lie. There is plenty you can do, but the people who took over and were able to attract lots and lots of people, nothing you can do, just believe what we tell you, do what we tell you, and then everything will be okay. And that's not what the man said. And so what we've worked diligently to do is to understand in the context of, you know, real life conflicts and diseases and traumas in people's lives, we've worked diligently to understand in his first century Aramaic teachings exactly what he was saying about what can be done. And we're here to make that available. And we're here to refine our understanding and assist each person who contacts the work to do the same with theirs. So if you're out there in listener land, our call in number is 563-999-3581. Push 1. Gene will introduce you by area code. We'll have a conversation. And we still have lots of work to do. We've still not taken our trailer back. So if there's no conversation to be had, if we don't have any questions or anything to move forward, I think it's maybe time to just play the outro, Jeannie, and we'll let the show go for today. One of the things
All
I'd like people to do, if you're working with the tools, you know, keep a notebook. And, you know, sometimes people will be, say, doing a worksheet, and they come across a really big block or question, and by the time the radio show comes on, they've forgotten it. Keep a notebook and write your questions down. And, you know, be ready to push one when we're ready. And let's fill this space with really meaningful, useful information and understanding. So, Ms. Jeannie, if there is nobody with a hand up, I'm going to just say, everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. We'll look forward to being with you tomorrow, and maybe you'll have some questions for us.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.